Hello, you're watching Talking Europe. Thank you for joining us in Brussels to talk about the political hot potato that is farming. The Common Agricultural Policy is the EU's biggest item of expenditure, representing about a third of the budget. Providing food for Europeans is obviously of critical importance, even though the sector accounts for just over 1% of the EU's GDP. This February the 19th, while Paris was preparing to host the International Salon of Agriculture, the European Commission presented what it called its Vision for Agriculture and Food, a roadmap that builds on the response to the widespread farmers' protests of last year. The Commission says it wants to keep easing the administrative burden on farmers and also relax some environmental constraints. It's also pledging to do more to combat unfair competition from imported products. This is some of the major free trade deals it is defending, such as the agreement with Mercosur, are coming in for criticism. Well, to discuss all this, I'm joined by two MEPs. Per Holmgren is a Swedish member of the Greens, and he sits on the Committee on the Environment, Climate and Food Safety. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And I'm also joined here by Herbert Dorfman, an Italian MEP from the European People's Party. He's on the Committee on Agriculture and Rural Development. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
So, Herbert Dorfman, you've been saying that on this whole strategic dialogue that the European Commission is holding with farmers, we need to have a real discussion about what sort of farming we want and what kind of farms we should be financially supporting. Just to explain that a bit for us.
Yeah, I personally think the main question is, do we want to produce food in Europe? Do we want the food produced for our food for our consumers, or do we want to outsource this? And I'm convinced that it is extremely important, especially in this complicated time, to produce food here in Europe, to do it in a sustainable way, but to produce. And that is not that easy as it seems, because we have 450 million people in Europe with different possibilities to spend if they go to the supermarket. I think every European has right to get food at a reasonable price and has the right to get food from Europe. I don't want to have a situation where richer people can afford high-quality European food and others need to buy things from coming from outside. Mm.
Per Holmgren, do you think enough is being done to produce food then in Europe?
There's definitely a lot of dilemma in these issues. In many aspects, I think we agree that we should be more self-sufficient. We should be able to provide more food within Europe for the Europeans. But on the other hand, I also want to see this huge transition for the agricultural and forestry sector as well, going into a fossil independency and making sure that the agro sector also becomes one of the big main solutions when it comes to tackle climate change and support biodiversity, etc.
We'll come back to the whole climate aspect. I just want to get your thoughts, Herbert Dorfman, on this whole loosening of bureaucratic procedures, loosening of the administrative burden on farmers. From what you've seen, has that happened much since the protests this time last year? Has progress on that been made as far as you're concerned?
Well, we did a simplification package and I think it was a good one. On the other side, it's clear that this public spending, so the money the farmers get is public money, and I always tell to the farmers, you need to be aware that this is public money, and if you get public money, there needs to be a public good behind this, because otherwise how can you justify this public money? But over the years, I think we increased in complexity, in bureaucratic hurdles, and we have to see how we can achieve a good policy with less bureaucracy, because this policy has more or less 9 million beneficiaries, and we need to be aware that each new rule we introduce is a rule for 9 million farmers all over Europe, and the things get complex, not only for the farmer, also for the administration who needs to deal with these things.
Per Holmgren, let's come back to what you said about the transition towards fossil-free industry. And we did have a previous strategy called Farm to Fork.
Yeah.
But only 11 out of the 27 texts in Farm to Fork were actually adopted. So people were saying that that was already going back on green commitments. In this new strategy that the Commission has unveiled on the 19th of February, are we seeing further backtracking on previous green commitments?
Yeah, I think there's a risk, at least. It's not really, to me, clear enough when it comes to the details. At the same time, I also think that we need some simplifications, at least, especially for some particular groups, like the young farmers. We know we have an average age in Europe of roughly 58 years old, the average age for the farmers, and it's getting higher. And we're also getting less and less farmers. And one of the reasons is, of course, that it's so hard for the young farmers to come into the market. So from a green perspective, we would like to see many more farmers working in small scale, but also large scale, but a bigger diversity among the farmers as well. Yeah. And for that, we definitely need some simplification.
Yeah, but on the green aspects of it, Herbert, you've also talked about climate change as having a big impact on farming in general. Do you think that this new strategy, does it actually give some safeguards to farming in terms of protection from the sort of worst aspects of climate change?
Well, first of all, I was myself rapporteur on the Farm to Fork strategy in the House. And if I read the Farm to Fork strategy and if I read the communication which came out now from Commissioner Hansen, that's completely different tone. So we come back to reasonable times, I would say. The disaster of the last legislative term seems over, and I'm very happy about this. But it is clear that if you look, I think the climate change, or there is no sector which is that affected by climate change now as the farming sector. The farming sector is the first one to suffer. Mm-hmm. And the farmers are the first one to be interested, or need to be interested, to fight against climate change. And I personally, I'm also convinced that they can give a good contribution. We started in the last term on the carbon farming, but we can go further. And I think that this combination between active and passive fight against climate change and adaptation must be essential or remain essential also in the years to come.
You've both worked on the issue of pesticides in different ways, and of course that's relevant to this Mercosur agreement, because some groups here in the European Parliament have said, what if we have, through Mercosur, a backdoor to Europe with imports that might have pesticides that would not be accepted here. What's the latest on that, Per?
Well, from our point of view, first of all, we always would like to see some sort of mirror clause. So everything expected for the farmers within Europe, we should put the same equal constraints on farmers outside of Europe if they want to export their goods to European markets. Otherwise, we don't have a level playing field.
Yeah. And this whole border task force that's been announced to monitor imports, does that convince you or is it still a bit vague?
It's a bit vague to me, as many things yet. I mean, you described the previous term as a very bad term. We, after all, raised some ambitions when it comes to the climate sustainability, and I'm afraid that this legislation period, we will back in the wrong direction from my perspective.
Yeah. Herbert Dorfman, I do want to get your thoughts on Mercosur as well, because, as you know, it's very much opposed in France at the moment. But you've argued that Europe cannot slam its door in the face of partners or potential partners, and that involves Latin America, of course.
Well, I'm convinced we are in a geopolitical situation, unfortunately, where the European Union is losing friends over the world at an incredible speed. And in this moment, to say no to Latin America, where maybe we are culturally, historically, very, very close to this continent, I think would not be wise. But said this, it's clear that we have some sectors in agriculture. This might be beef, but also poultry, bioethanol, sugar, which are and will be affected by Mercosur. And we need to find a solution for them. The other sectors, even in France, if I think to the wine sector, for example, also the sparkling wine sector, cheeses, there are sectors which can benefit from Mercosur. So we need to find, I think, a proper solution for the sectors which might be affected and which are already not strong ones, so we cannot expose them further to a strong competition from coming from Mercosur.
Your thoughts on that, on Mercosur generally?
Yeah, I mean, on considering the fact that the world is changing very fast now, we cannot solve these issues by more protectionism and hard borders. But once again, when it comes to the Mercosur deal, especially when it comes to agriculture, we know that a lot of the farmers out on the streets during the last few years have been very, very critical, especially when it comes to the Mercosur deal. Yeah. And once again, from a green perspective, we always want to see this sort of mirror clause so that we can continue to have trade, but it should be a level playing field so we don't have a situation where they can sell things that are more or less impossible or even illegal to produce here in Europe.
OK, we'll end it there. We've run out of time, but thank you so much to both of you, Perl Holmgren and Herbert Dorfman. And, of course, we'll continue to monitor what happens around that Mercosur deal very closely here on France 24. Thanks for watching us here on Talking Europe.